for the Board of Chiropractic Examiners for Arizona. Today is Wednesday, February 15th, 2023. Can I get a roll call, please?
Dr. Bennett?
Present.
Dr. Knopf?
Present.
Ms. Powell?
Present.
Mr. Turbinson? Dr. Guarino?
Present. Thank you. If we have anybody here that is attending just for the purpose of attending their first board meeting after having been licensed in the last year, thank you. I think you'll find the meeting informative. We are going to take our agenda out of order. We're going to start with our licensure tab number 10 regarding Naomi Gregory.
Yes. Chairman and board members, you have a memo from the board investigator regarding Naomi Gregory. And the reason that she's before you is that she failed part four, but then she passed subsequently later on 11-12 of 22. So board staff recommends that we approve her for licensure.
There are no other issues connected with that?
No, sir. Nope, that was all.
Okay, board members, any questions for Dr. Gregory? I see that she is present, or if not, you can make a motion.
I make the motion to grant licensure, pending all appropriate fees are paid.
Okay, I got a first by Ms. Paul, second by Dr. Knopf. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, so we have four ayes, and it looks like Mr. Servanton is not joined yet. So the motion carries and passes. Let's go on to tab number 11, the matter of Luke Schillig, also under licensure.
Actually, so you have a memo from Investigator Dominic. He also failed part four. And then subsequently passed on 11-12 of 22. Board staff recommends that we grant licensure.
Okay, board members, what's your pleasure? Any questions for Dr. Schillig, or would you like to make a motion?
I make the motion to grant licensure pending all appropriate fees are paid.
I'll second.
Okay, I got a first by Ms. Paul, second by Dr. Knopf. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we have four ayes and one not connected yet for Mr. Turbinson. So the ayes have it and the motion carries. Thank you. Let's go back to tab number one now regarding Dr. Michael Abney.
Chairman, we have a compliance matter before you for probation. Dr. Adney was on a probation order for 2 years. Part of that was to take the EBAS within 90 days, take 24 hours of continuing education, and then a subsequent 12 hours of continuing education, and reimburse the board for the cost of the investigation in the amount of $885.51 within 30 days. And that was stayed. And then the other part of that was timely. He was to renew timely. He has taken and passed the EBAS, so he is compliant in that. He is compliant with the 24 hours of CEs and ethics. The second set of 12 hours of CEs, he is not compliant. He took the same course, boundary training 101 to 112, for the first set of CEs, and then took it again for the second, and then included it on his 2022 renewal for the 12 hours of continuing education for 2022. So he's not compliant in regards for what board staff could determine in regards to that. Additionally, his 2020 renewal was late. It was not submitted until 3/5 of 2020. His 2022 renewal was late, which included the boundary training 101 to 112. And then his 2023 renewal was late. It was submitted on 2/3 of 23. So out of the last 4 years, two of his renewals have been late, with one being deficient on the continuing education.
Okay, and when I reviewed the board meeting materials, I noticed on page 41 of 47 of our board meeting materials for his 2023 renewal, that was submitted late, as you said, on February 3rd of 2023, but it looks like 4 hours of CE was also taken in 2023 in early February and not taken in 2022.
Correct.
So I just wanted to point that out. Okay, so, and for tabs numbers 1 through 9 that we have before us, you know, our primary purpose is to obviously not rehear any of these cases, but we're here to determine if a violation of probation order has been has occurred, and then also what to do about it. So, board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Adney, and is he present?
Yes, sir, I'm present.
Hi, welcome. Okay, so board members, any questions for Dr. Adney?
I'd be curious, Mr. Chairman, to hear what Dr. Adney has to say about these issues that have been brought before us.
Okay, Dr. Adney?
Yes, sir. The 12 hours for 2022, I believe, that are not being counted, I didn't realize that those weren't, you know, that I couldn't take that course to do the ethics for the next year. I don't know, you know, I guess why they wouldn't be counted. I know it's the same course, but I didn't see where those, like I took the hours and I redid the hours, but I didn't see, or, and I don't understand why they wouldn't be counted, because it's just another ethics course. It's really hard to find 36 different hours of ethics. And I had to email, pardon me if I butcher his name, this was Dr. Kolach, I believe, to get some of the hours approved, because I couldn't find courses that were approved with enough hours for Arizona. So he did approve those hours. So, and I had looked on multiple sites to try to find the ethics courses to give me more hours, but I couldn't find enough. So those were approved by him via email. So I just took that same course because I figured I would run into the same problem.
Thank you. Let's pause right there. And can I get a determination from Mr. Monahan or board staff? Is there anything in statute that would prevent a provider or a doctor from taking the same course twice? I know we've run into this before in other cases, and they were different because I think the doctor didn't know that he took the same course twice, which is a whole other problem. But is there anything that would prevent Dr. Adney from taking the same ethics course 2 years in a row?
Well, statutorily, and Alyssa, you can jump in here. This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Statutorily, you know, I'll review that, but I do not believe that is a requirement. It seems like there's a practical issue here. And that is an issue that you can run into when you assign that many CE courses in one period, because this is a one-year annual licensure renewal, that you can run into that issue where you simply run out of courses. And so it says, you know, do not use the courses that you have approved for under the order. It doesn't speak to retaking that course if you're unable to find more ethics courses. So I think, you know, that's kind of the analysis here, is to look at what was done by the licensee in order to try to comply with that order, and if it was or was not possible.
Okay, and then the separate issue is that you use the ethics courses for the probation order to try to also use those for your 12 hours of continuing education for the same year. So what do you say to that? The board order specifically prohibits that.
If I would have to double check the online CE courses, because if I did that, I probably entered that information in error, because I'm pretty sure that I took separate hours for those, because I know that it did say in the order that it was separate. So I might have just input the information incorrectly or double input it, but I'll double check that I did take all the CE hours and If I did that, I didn't intend to, because I definitely did see that in the order. But I will have to double check my CE hours on those sites.
Okay, and I know that when we approved your license, you know, you did it with the consent agreement, and you have kind of a lot of space here, and you kind of came in under a probationary order. Sure. So why would you renew late? You know, when if you renew late, a lot of times your license automatically goes on administrative suspension, and you've got an order that says that if you don't renew on time, your license will be suspended. So why would you put yourself at risk like that?
I don't have an excuse for that, sir. I shouldn't have, and I really shouldn't have, and I don't want to explain that. I don't have an excuse for that.
Okay. Board members, any other questions for Dr. Eddy?
Just a point of clarification, make sure I understand this correctly, Mr. Chairman. Do I understand that the original finding was that the cost of the investigations were to be paid by Dr. Abney, but then that that requirement was stayed? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. That's correct.
Yeah, the cost was to be stayed, provided that he complied with the probation order, which he was not able to do.
I think, Mr. Chairman, that are we at the discussion stage?
Yes.
Okay. Just for the purposes of discussion, I think that there are circumstances relative to the availability of the requirement. However, putting the same course down for 12 hours and not, whether it's a mistake or not, is, you know, it's a violation. Not getting licensure done, you know, in these circumstances, two out of the years involved, it's a violation. So there are potentially pretty serious consequences here. However, as I said, I think there are mitigated circumstances. Is it an option for us to perhaps give him a little more time to find the makeup hours? Do we also have the option of revoking the stay on the cost of investigation?
I have to look at that, Dr. Pettis. This is AG Shamus line, and the issue with that, as I saw, I believe, in the order, was that it was contingent. The stay was contingent upon him complying with the order. So if you were to say that he's non-compliant with the order, in order to revoke the stay of the penalty, then the entire order that you would be saying the entire order wasn't complied with.
So can I ask a question for clarification on the 12 hours?
Go ahead, Dr. Edner.
I might be confused, because the way I understand what you were saying is that I put the 12 hours for the first year of CE for the 24, and then also for the second year, I completed it twice, but I also put that class for the second year for 12 hours. Not that I put the 12-hour course as part of my regular CEs. Are those ethics hours something different than the 12 hours for that Boundary 101 training?
Is that Steph can weigh in if I get this incorrect, but it looks like for your 2022 renewal, you used your 12 hours of ethics training that was part of your probationary order. Instead of taking, and you listed that as your continuing ed to count for your relicensure, which you're not able to do. You're supposed to take separate hours.
Okay.
Okay, so the board order says that if he's not compliant with his probation, that the stay will be lifted and he'll have to pay the restitution. So, Dr. Abney, are you saying that I didn't get a real firm feeling from you that you actually took the extra 12 hours. Is that something you're going to be able to provide for us in the future?
Yes, sir. I'm pulling that up as we speak to see if I can find those certificates.
Okay. And you can always submit that in the future. But board members, what's your pleasure? What do you want to do with this today?
Well, I think if we have something that's potentially coming in from Dr. Abney, I think we have to leave it open to see what comes in. Is that what makes the most sense here?
Well, we do, but he's also late on his renewal for 2020 and 2023, so he's in violation of the board order just from that alone.
I tend to agree with Dr. Knopf that I think that he is in violation of the board order. I think it's the extent of violation, and I think that the information that he tells us that he can provide to us would mitigate, how extensive that violation is, and that would impact our decision. So I would suggest that we perhaps move this matter forward, take it off the table for this meeting, and give him the opportunity to provide that information and bring it back up again at the next meeting.
Okay. Is there a motion around that?
I make that motion, that we table this matter pending further information coming from Dr. Abney, and put it on next month's agenda.
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion, board members? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed?
I'm going to abstain I'm late, but I didn't. Yeah.
Okay, so we have four ayes in favor of postponing this to the next meeting. All right, thanks, Dr. Abney. We're done for today, and we're going to move on to tab number two for Dr. Carmen Brodeur.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Before you have a memo from Investigator Dominic regarding Dr. Brodeur. This consent agreement dates back to 2007. In terms of the agreement, they're compliant. There is a stay regarding the record-keeping audits because they provided evidence back in was that 2008 that they had sold their practice and they're not currently practicing and have not been practicing. Oh, I'm sorry, July 26, 2007. So they've never undergone the record keeping audit. So we were bringing this matter before you to maybe either close the matter and lift the stay and close the matter and allow them the option to maybe retire their licenses since they appear to not be currently practicing and don't have the intent, but I would allow them the opportunity to address that.
Hi, Dr. Brodeur.
Hello.
I see that you're joining, Carmen, this is your tab. What do you have to say about that? Do you have any intention to go back into practice? You're kind of on an indefinite probation at this point. Would you be comfortable retiring your license to put this behind you?
I'd like to keep my license at this point. I have done my continuing education every year and renewed my license every year. I was under the impression that I was under a permanent stay as of 2018. The last communication I had was with the executive director, Justin Bohall. And I'd like to continue as is.
Okay. Board members, any questions for Dr. Brodeur?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Ms. Hall.
I would like to see the agreement, the written agreement between the doctor and I think it was Dr. Gross, who is supposedly taking custody of all the records and is responsible for giving the records out should they be requested. Can we ask for that?
I don't know that that's appropriate at this point because we're trying to determine if there's a probation issue here. So I don't know how that's relevant to her probation order. The difficulty in complying is that she's not currently treating, and so she can't provide any record audits, I believe.
And so we're trying to determine whether she should keep her license?
Well,
she's on an indefinite probation status right now. And so I think staff was looking for a pathway to kind of wrap this up, and if she had, you know, and okay. decide if she's not planning on going back into practice or didn't want to keep her license, then we could deal with it in a way that it wouldn't show up as a continuing probation matter on every year that passes since 2007.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, also, I don't know that necessarily, I understand she, I just from an administrative perspective, doesn't mind staying on the continued probation. I was, as you said, staff was just kind of trying to find some pathways to clean some of these items up just to avoid getting into situations where staff is having to continually monitor them and manage them. And make sure that we're aware of what's happening with them and making good transitions from executive director to executive director. I don't know that necessarily she'd have to retire her license. I think we could discuss the possibility of making the license inactive, which means they would still have to renew every year. They would the continuing education option would be waived, and if at some point in time they wish to go back to active, that would come back to you to put their license back to active.
Okay. So, Dr. Carmen Broder, what do you say to that? Would you be interested in maybe having an active status on your license to waive your CE requirement for each year, and then if you chose to come back into practice, you would just come before the board, and we would have to find a pathway to get back to an active license?
Well, in order for me to go inactive, would that be a consent order to go inactive, or would that be an administrative order?
We had discussed is potentially an attestation that you're not practicing and that you would notify the board should you choose to go back to practice.
So if your question, is that a disciplinary order?
It would not be disciplinary. It would just close this matter out.
Yes, the board, this is AG Seamus Monaghan. The board would just terminate the order saying that it's 16 years old and there's no evidence. And they've admitted that they're not planning to go back to practice at this time. So the inactive status could just be done through an affidavit after, which we're agreeing to put it in that status after you terminate the order, if that's what you choose.
As long as there is no consent order related to the inactive status, I would be fine with that.
And then staff would just document that there were the record audits that were not completed. But again, it's 16 years old. I don't know that it's like we're trying to get blood out of a stone.
So I would still have a license. It would just be an inactive status.
Correct. And you would not be under inactive. You are not able to practice.
Mm-hmm.
In that state. In order to be able to actively to practice, you have to go to active.
I'd be fine with that as long as it was administrative but not consent order.
I think we could agree to Mr. Chairman, I believe we could stipulate to that if AG Monaghan is comfortable with that.
I think that's fine.
Okay. So
Mr. Chairman. I agree with everything that's been said. I think that's a good pathway. I did not recall seeing anything in the materials with regard to any, dialogue between, Mr. Bohol and Dr. Brodeur with regard to her last statement about just assuming that it was ongoing. I didn't see that any of that correspondence in the records initially, and I just did a cursory review and don't find it in there as well. Do we have any staff knowledge of any kind of dialogue of that nature?
We do not. The only thing we have is what we provided in the materials that the board on January 18th of 2017 granted a stay of probation.
Yeah, I did see that. Okay.
If I could interject, my last letter from Mr. Bohol is February 5th, 2018, and it said that the board has determined to grant a stay, and it did not give any length of time for that stay. That was my last communication from the Board of Chiropractor, other than continuing education.
Yeah, that's fine. I just was seeking clarification on that. I think that the suggestion of moving forward with an inactive status serves the purposes of all parties.
Okay. Is there a motion to have staff work that out with Dr. Voter and for a pathway to inactive status?
And if the board would like the motion to wait to terminate the or staff can terminate the order on receipt of the affidavit.
Okay.
Thank you.
And just to clarify, so inactive status, I do not need to do any continuing education year by year.
You do not. You just need to pay, you'll need to renew every year in order to kind of maintain that status. You'll just need to submit a renewal application and pay the annual renewal fee, but the CE hours are waived.
Thank you.
But then when you reinstate, you will have to kind of accumulate those up to 24 hours of continuing education to be reinstated.
Understood.
I think also if it's long enough, there's a time matter with regard to taking and passing the spec exam, correct?
That's for retired status, not the inactive status.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's one of those things that's on the list of things to revisit when it comes to rules. Sorry. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move that staff be instructed to pursue a change in status wherein the order would be lifted, inactive status would be achieved by Dr. Brodeur, and that we make that process contingent upon the receipt of the affidavit that Mr. Monahan referred to.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, I got Ms. Powell for a second. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we had 5 ayes that time. All right, thanks, Dr. Brodeur.
Thank you.
Okay, and now we're going to move on to the next tab. Is Dr. Mark Brodeur?
Correct. This one is similar in nature. He is not practicing. He is compliant with all pieces of the order except for the record-keeping audit, and the board stayed the record-keeping audit back in 2017.
Okay, Dr. Mark Brodeur, are you present?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi, I can hear you. Welcome. Welcome. Okay, well, you heard what we had just done. Would you be interested in moving to an inactive status as well?
Yes, that would work for me.
Okay, board members, any questions for Dr. Mark Brodeur? Okay. So, board members, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion identical to my previous motion, but relevant to Dr. Brodeur. Do I have to state it all for the record?
That's always a good idea. So the move to inactive status and sign an affidavit that he's not going to practice anymore.
Correct.
Or that he's currently not practicing. All right, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Dr. Knauf on the second. Any further discussion, board members? Okay, hearing that, I'm going to call for the question to move him to an active status. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. Thank you, Dr. Mark Brodeur.
Thank you.
Could I ask a question, please?
Yes.
So I just want to clarify. So I'm going to receive an affidavit by mail just saying that I do not currently practice. And once I sign that affidavit, then it will go to inactive status.
You can work that out with staff after the meeting and they'll answer all your questions.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, our next tab is tab number 4, Dr. David Campbell. With Mr. Morrison from his car. Welcome.
Yes. Yeah, apparently I can't read well enough to know that this is a virtual meeting only.
Right.
Okay. Before you, you have a probation review memo from Investigator Dominic. Dr. Campbell was on probation for 2 years, and during that time he needed to complete 8 hours of continuing education in record keeping and 8 hours of continuing education in billing coding, and that he was to have those pre-approved by board staff and complete 4 hours of chiropractic adjusting techniques, and 4 hours of ethics. And then within 5 months of the effective date of the order, he was to enter to an agreement with a board-approved monitor and was subject to a minimum of 4 chiropractic record audits. And that the time frame for the audits was to be scheduled and determined by the monitor. In regards to his compliance, he's compliant with the 8 hours of continuing education and record keeping. Board staff determined, based on what we had received, that he did not complete the 4 hours of continuing education in billing and coding. He's not compliant with the 4 hours of continuing education in chiropractic adjusting techniques. He is compliant with the 4 hours of continuing education in ethics. And we have only received 1 record audit out of the required minimum of 4. Additionally, I would like to note for the record that Mr. Morrison did contact me and that Dr. Campbell has requested an additional 60 days to work out what occurred between him and the auditor which he engaged, which was KMCU, regarding the compliance and the reports. And then additionally, there were supplemental materials added to your materials that was a timeline from KMCU regarding what on their end transpired in the discussions with Dr. Campbell about the audit. And so though maybe there was some, there seems to be a lot of confusion on what the board's expectation was versus what actually transpired. And with that, that concludes that, unless you have any questions for me.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Vanderveen. Mr. Morrison, I've read your supplemental letter request.
Just a couple of comments, Mr. Chairman and the board. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. With respect to the billing and coding, it looks like we did submit quite a bit. There was case management, there was documentation and coding from Colossus, and there was patient intake documentation. There is, it looks like we may be 2 hours short on that, and we'll take care of that. With respect to the chiropractic adjusting technique, Dr. Campbell did take 4 hours. Unfortunately, it was online, and I believe the order requires it to be in person. And with respect to KMCU, Dr. Campbell employed them and met with them for over a year. So the intent of Dr. Campbell was to comply with the board order. With respect to KCMU, we're in communication with them, and we're trying to figure out why there were not more audits submitted, or at least reports submitted, because Dr. Campbell, like I said, did meet with Lisa Hart from that group for over a year with the intent of improving his practice, but also with the intent of complying with the board requirement that he undergo the audits. And we're not sure why those meetings either didn't result in audits or result in audit reports. And that's why we're asking for a little bit of additional time, because Dr. Campbell felt he had been in complete compliance. So with apologies to the board, we understand we are not. However, and I did ask for an additional 60 days in thinking this through and thinking through that he's going to have in-person adjusting instruction. I would like to amend that to make it 90 days, if that's okay with the board.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Board members, any questions for either Mr. Morrison or Dr. Campbell?
I just have one question, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hall?
Were the meetings with Pathomostan University, did they result in an audit or were they training sessions?
From the timeline, it says that they were like 1 hour coaching calls. So there are coaching sessions, and if you look there, there's number N, February 20, 2020. There's a comment in there that says Dr. Lisa Hart, coach, reviews a patient file with Dr. Campbell during scheduled coaching time. Dr. Lisa stated, but that wasn't a formal audit, and we never got to complete that chart before he had to take the pause.
Okay, so there has been no chart audit.
Actually,
there was one.
There was a 9-page report from Lisa Hart.
Okay.
And when I talked to him, there was one, and it was review of records that he provided to them. It was not based on what the auditor went into the office and did, like, just pick some anonymous record.
Which was the board's expectation.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Powell. Board members, any other questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I this is Dr. Wayne Bennett. I am reading the information from KMC University as well and had noted point in. I also see here that there may have been some delays associated with COVID. Can we get the details from the doctor on those?
Dr. Campbell, if you're on, please address that.
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. There was a few delays in there. My mother passed being one of them. And then I had COVID. My whole staff had COVID. I actually had COVID twice. But those were delays that, and we'd get back at it. What had happened initially with KMCU was I had done originally a 3-chart review. And my understanding was, and I have now been told that that was an inaccurate understanding, but that meant I had my 3 of the audits, which apparently ended up being 1 audit because the first audit was 2 charts. And so then I followed back up with them and said, can I do more, like a more extensive program instead of doing the reviews to go one-on-one coaching where I paid for with Dr. Hart? And we started that, I believe, I want to say in January or February, and then it was ongoing. We had some delays in the middle of there, but until, I want to say it was like the end of November, which that wasn't at all, mandated by KMCU. That was something that I did to do with her. And she would have me upload documents that she would pick, or she would have me pick, and we'd upload those. And then the first part of those reviews was all going over the previous charts that were audited. And then we added in, and I thought we added in more than 1 chart, but I guess it was 1 chart that she's saying. That's why I have a phone call out to her. I haven't heard back from her. But that's what transpired in that period of time.
And so when was it, Dr. Campbell, during what time period?
I want to say it was January of 2020 or February of 2020 until the end of November, I believe, of that same year.
Okay. So my question is, so you were put on a 2-year probationary order, and now it's 2023. Did you think you had complied with this? I'm wondering why this has taken so long and why you didn't petition for release from probation if you think that you did comply with it.
So I did think I complied with it. I had called my attorney and asked when I was following up with KMCU, and they said, no, there were still some audits that needed to be done. And I found that out after calling my attorney and saying, where are we at with this? I thought we were done. I thought this was already taken care of. And so then that's when I started going back in with KMCU. Let's get this done. Let's do it differently. Let's go one-on-one with coaching. And then I thought it was done over going through that period of time with her. Because the first big part of that time was literally going over each one of those previous reviews and audits, each one of them, before going into anything new. And so I thought it was done. And I believe that I had two different phone calls into David Morrison's office trying to find out where we were at with this. And I did not know. I apologize. I did not know the process of lifting that probation. I had leaned a lot on his office to help me with that process.
Okay. Thank you. Board members, any questions?
I just want to get clear in my head about the number of audits that you believe you actually underwent. Two, is that right?
Well, actually, the doctor explained to me at least that in ongoing with the university and with Lisa Hart, he was under the impression that after they had the sessions and after she had reviewed the charts, that she would be submitting a report to the board. And that's our error. We should have followed up and made sure that she did submit the reports, and that we've got calls into her now, and I have a call into her now, trying to figure out either why that wasn't reported to the board or why it wasn't explained to Dr. Campbell that those were not audits but coaching.
But I got hearing two and then one more, like three records were all that was reviewed. Is that right?
That's all that we have officially on a report. And that's why we're trying to get clarification from Dr. Hart.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So Mr. Morrison is requesting a 90-day extension. What do you guys think about that? It sounds like he's making an effort to comply. What's your pleasure?
Agree, Mr. Chairman. I think there's been an effort to comply. I don't think this is intentional. I think that it's reasonable to allow a period of time to demonstrate that there has, in fact, been compliance. And if, in fact, there's been some sort of administrative misunderstanding about what or is or isn't an audit and what was or wasn't delivered, I think that if we gave them the 90 days requested, that would give them ample time to just get new audits done to make sure the compliance was present. So just for discussion's sake, I wonder what my colleagues feel about something like that.
No, I would agree.
Okay, let's have a motion then.
Mr. Chairman, I move that a 90-day stay be granted on this issue, or 90-day table for 90 days, with the stipulation that Dr. Campbell provide evidence of compliance of your initial board order.
And table equals extension, correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, I got a first by Dr. Bennett. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Dr. Knopf. Any further discussion, board members?
May I make a friendly amendment just to address the number of records that need to be audited? Do you call it an audit? Or would that be inappropriate at this point?
Well, I think that if he just demonstrates that he complied with the language of the order, that would be covered. But
okay. All right.
Okay, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor of granting a 90-day extension, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, and I think that Mr. Turbinson is having trouble with his audio again, so I think we have 4 out of 5 ayes. Oh, wait.
No, I said aye. Sorry.
Okay, all right. So we have 5 ayes. All right, thank you. So there'll be a 90-day extension granted.
Appreciate it. Thank you, board members.
Thank you.
Let's go on to tab number 5, Dr. David Ketchum. Vanderbeam?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome.
I'm also here. Good morning.
Hi, Ms. Carter. Thank
you, Carter.
Um, Before you, members of the board, you have a probation review member memo from Investigator Dominic regarding Dr. Ketchum's compliance with his board order. But board staff would stipulate that it, in the drafting of the order, it was unclear the expectations. And it appears that in that the board staff would be conducting the audit or at least maybe directing that a little more. And I believe in the transition of executive directors, this got dropped and he has not provided additional patient reports, but correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Dominic, he's not currently practicing?
No, he is.
Oh, he is practicing. Okay. And so then the chart audit did not begin because staff did not clarify the next step. And so that's where this one, we have not found evidence that he completed the minimum two chart audits, and he's not requested to have his probation terminated. But I believe that's partly on staff for kind of dropping the ball in regards to this matter, just the way the order was drafted, which is not how we draft them currently.
Okay, Ms. Harvey?
Yes, good morning, Dr. Ringo, members of the board. I appreciate Alyssa indicating as such. There was some confusion in that regard in terms of what was going to happen. Dr. Ketchum had reached out and communicated with Justin Bohol a couple of times regarding the audit, asking for information as to who was going to conduct those, who, how did he need to go about doing that. There was some email communication and some phone calls. Obviously, then, as everybody knows, Justin left to go work for another board, and then we had a lot of change there with board staff and also COVID and all sorts of craziness in that time period. Dr. Ketchum did comply with the other things in the order in terms of completing ethics, taking continuing education, the EBAS exam. He did submit a patient report, names and locations of patients treated in the 90 days. He believes he submitted more than one. He was going to try and confirm that. I would also remind the board that this, the issue that was part of this order or that became the reason for this order dealt with treatment that happened back in 2013 and 2014. Hasn't been any other issue before or since in terms of a board order with Dr. Ketchum. He is sorry for anything he contributed to the confusion about the audits. He would be happy to submit an updated report of patients that he treated in the last 90 days and would be happy to work with someone for the chart audits if the board would still like him to do that. And with respect to why he didn't request termination of his probation, if he thought that everything had been done, I think he just didn't, as many providers don't, he didn't realize that he actually had to formally request that it wouldn't just drop off. So he acknowledges that the patient reports had not been provided on a going forward basis after the initial time frame of the charge audits were not completed. If the board would like him to submit a patient report of all patients seen in the last 90 days from which the board could select some of them for audit, he would be happy to do that in order to finish compliance with the order. And again, he is present as well and would be happy to address you directly if you have questions.
All right, thank you, Ms. Carver. Board members, do you have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I see in there the information that we have here that Dr. Ketchum's renewal is currently incomplete. Can we verify that's the case, and if so, why is that the case?
Give board staff just a moment. We'll pull that up. Thank you. Well, he's missing 2 hours of continuing education
and
then record keeping for 2022. And he does have, he has 60 days to cure that under our statute and rules. So he does have till March 4th to correct that.
Can I speak real quick? I wasn't aware of that. I've taken this course most every year, pro-sport chiropractic through Logan College, and they have record-keeping with it. I believe there was 21 hours this year. Was that, it was, maybe it's my mistake, was that not included in that course?
It's not approved for 2 hours of record-keeping, no.
Okay, then that's my misunderstanding, and I'm happy to... can on course at this point, or is FB in person?
It can be online.
Okay. So let me write that down. And the other thing I just want to point out real quick is when I did renew, as Ms. Carver stated, I mistakenly just assumed that everything was resolved. I didn't realize I had a petition, so I did not put down on my renewal form that it was of probationary status. So that was also my mistake on the renewal for the licensure for 2022.
Okay. Board members, any other questions? So it sounds like Dr. Petchum is willing to take the record keeping continuing ed in a hurry. Do you want to grant him an extension to do that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm inclined to support that notion as long as also we see evidence of the other issues of apparent noncompliance with regard to, I would like the patient record report. Since it appears that we never really got full compliance on that.
So staff was hoping, I think, to have him hire a board-approved auditor to handle that and take the burden off of staff so that he wouldn't have to supply a list of patients to us for us to select.
Okay.
And so that would be an amendment of his probation order if he thought that was a good idea.
Yeah.
I think the way it's written, staff could, and Alyssa, if you don't think this is correct, but the way it's written, it appears that staff could reach out to possibly a board-approved auditor and direct them to reach out to, you know, it seems the board needs to facilitate it, not necessarily conduct the audit, but again, that's up to you.
And we're happy to do that. I think we just didn't want to get into the audit business. So we got out of it.
and if it's easier for board staff, if we could just be, and I can reach out to Alyssa after the meeting and get the current list of approved monitors, I'm happy to just have Dr. Ketchum make contact with him directly so the board doesn't have to play middleman. Situation.
I think that for board staff that would be ideal, and then if we could maybe just and up to the board's discretion on how many audits you'd like him to complete to be considered compliant.
The prior order just for the board's edification provided for 2 chiropractic record audits.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for as well.
One of the questions that I had with Justin Bohall at the time is that I am in a multidisciplinary practice, and with our current note system, there are sometimes multiple doctors that sign off on the same notes because different things are provided by different providers. I'm currently only practicing part-time. I'm in more of a management capacity, but in the audit, for my clarification, how does that work? As far as
can they just, since those other doctors are not involved, can the, is it okay just to submit those notes after the whole thing audited?
We would probably just have to communicate with staff and with the auditor as to how they would handle that.
I think that was the confusion with Justin initially, and we never, that's why he never got answers back, and I just assumed the matter was solved.
My impression is that in a multidisciplinary environment where there are multiple providers in the same patient treatment record, if we were asking for a chiropractic audit on that, then the components of chiropractic record keeping would have to be present regardless of anything else. And so those would be, that would be the only thing that they would look for. And
yeah. And they are. It's just there's multiple signatures on the same note, but all the components are there. And we set it up that way based on the continuing education I had with record keeping with, I forgot her name now. It was one that was referred to me by the board. But since this time we've changed our complete note system based on that continuing. We had to do a one-on-one, so I spent the whole day with her.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman, for staff. Do we have a sense of how long the turnaround time is on audits with our board-approved consultants?
What would it take, probably 60 days?
I would say probably 60 to 90 days.
Okay, thank you.
And again, the extension would be for him to, really the time frame would be for him to reach out, right? And then whenever the board approved auditor can finish, they would just provide it to you. It could be 30, 60, 90 days. But really, just for our sake, the time frame would be the time frame in which we need to set it up, if that makes sense.
All right. So, no, didn't quite make sense for me. Point of clarification, are you saying that any extension that we would get contemplate would include not only the time that the auditor would take, but also a time that would allow for the doctor to reach out and make the logistical arrangements for the audit?
So the time frame would only be the time frame with which he needs to reach out and start and engage the audit, right? Start the audit. We don't know how long it will take the auditor to get the report back. So the time, does that clarify it for you?
Yes, it does. And for me, what clarifies it is that in the event that we're just wanting the audit getting done, with regard to this issue, we would not be concerning ourselves with the content of the records. Which seems a little bit odd, but I guess in this situation, that's the appropriate thing to do. If the records came back flawed, that would complicate things. But that would be the result, result in a new board complaint. But in this situation, would it be that we wouldn't even look at those records as a result of that audit, or just the fact of getting the audit done would mean compliance?
No, you would then review the records and, I'd have to look directly at the order again. But the way it was written didn't appear that the board had authority to do that. However, you can open a complaint from what you find.
Okay, so he would be compliant if he had the audit done, we got the results of the audit, and that would be over with and done, we'd be finished with that. But then if there were deficiencies that revealed themselves in that process, we would contemplate opening a new complaint relative to those deficiencies.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
That's fine.
Okay. And I'm just looking at the board order right now. Give me just a moment. Okay, so what's your pleasure? Do you want to grant 30 to 60 days or so for him to engage an auditor, get one chart record done maybe, and update his record-keeping fee?
Mr. Chairman, can we just make the order that we give him 30 or 60 days to come into compliance with the conditions of the original order without stipulating anything beyond that?
Ms. Vanderveen, is that, I think Mr. Monahan had alluded to earlier that the way it's written leaves a little bit of wiggle room for staff to go ahead and allow him to get his own auditor so that they don't have to do the auditing.
I'm comfortable with that. Well, and I'll just provide the list of current auditors if that's okay with the board.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Yeah, I would move, Mr. Chairman, that we allow grant a 60-day extension for the doctor to come into compliance with the initial board order.
Okay.
I'll second.
We got a first by Dr. Bennett, second by Dr. Knopf. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. We have 5 ayes in favor.
Can I clarify real quick? So with that original board order, do you still want me to submit a current list of patients to the board?
No, you're not going to have to do that, and you can work that out with staff.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay, let's move on to tab number 6. Dr. Jeffrey Rogers, welcome.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great. Ms. Vanderveen?
Before you, you have a probation review memo from Mr. Dominic. And Dr. Rogers was on probation for 1 year, and the probation would be stayed until such a time the respondent returns to practice chiropractic. He is compliant. He has completed the continuing education, even though that part of the order was stayed. My board staff's understanding is that he is not currently practicing, and so he has not completed the record audit. This is an order from 2021, and board staff was seeking maybe some direction as if you wanted to continue the stay, lift the stay, and allow him to go into inactive or retired status, or if you wanted to just continue the stay and allow him to remain on probation.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Rogers, what have you been up to? You're currently not practicing, I believe. Is that true?
That is correct. I am not practicing at this time.
And do you plan on going back into practice anytime soon?
I don't have the plans for it right this moment, no.
Okay. And I believe you were on earlier for some of the previous cases. Would you be interested in moving to either an active or retired status?
Not retirement, possibly inactive. I just have some questions about that, though. One, I guess, is from what I understand from the previous people that have the same situation, is that they would then be required to possibly do up to 24 hours of continuing education at that time. And then is there anything else? Do I have to take a test for a pre-licensure, or at that time if I choose to come back into practice, am I back on probation? Are my notes then audited for a year again at that time, or how does that work?
Staff can correct me if I'm wrong here, but if you go on inactive status, so you're not able to comply with the original probation order because you're not currently treating patients. So if you went on inactive status and you came back into regular practice, you would have to still fulfill the probation order. And, you know, you have the ability to do that because you've got patients that you'd be seeing at that point.
Okay. And then, as for, taking, the relicensure test or anything like that, do I have to retake that to the state of Arizona, or how does that work?
Ms. Vanderveen, can you explain the pathway of coming back into regular license status?
So when a license is placed on inactive status in order to go back to active status, you have to, depending on how long your license is in that inactive status, you have to take up to 24 hours of continuing education and pay the $200 reinstatement fee. If you are inactive, you still have to renew annually. The CE requirements are waived during that time period, but you still have to pay the renewal fee and pay, and submit the application every year to maintain that.
Okay.
And there's no requirement for examination. The board could stipulate that should you choose to come back to practice, that you would have to comply with the record audit at the time of your reinstatement.
Okay. Yeah, I would be for doing that. Going inactive.
Do you have any questions for Dr. Badgers? Okay. Does anybody have any motions they'd like to make or discussion?
Does anything need to be done addressing the current probationary status, or do we just move to direct staff to establish an active status for Dr. Rogers?
This is AG Seamus Mahan again. It would be the same as your last motion, which would be direct staff to work with Dr. Rogers to effectuate the affidavit and inactive status application, and then once that's input, the board staff would then terminate the order.
If the order is terminated, then in the event that Dr. Rogers would return to practice, elect to return to practice down the road, what are the mechanics, the legal logistics relative to having him be in compliance with an order that we had terminated?
I don't know that it's, Seamus, correct me if I'm wrong, but because a reinstatement, some reinstatements, and like this reinstatement coming back before the board wouldn't fall under the executive director's purview to approve, so it would have to come back before the board with the memo stating, you know, during his time of licensure, he was under this order. The audits weren't completed as part of that. So you may have to grant him licensure under a consent agreement to back to the active status. So since that's part of the board's file, when he completes that reinstatement, that's still a public document. That's still part of a record.
And under your statute, you can require any combination of things when someone comes back to licensure to show that they are competent.
Okay. Thank you. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we direct staff to effectuate the signing of the affidavit and to work with Dr. Rogers in moving to inactive status.
I'll second.
Okay. Okay, I got a first by Dr. Bennett, a second by Dr. Knoth. Any further discussion, board members? Okay, hearing that, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Okay, we have five ayes that have it. Thank you, Dr. Rogers.
Will the board then just contact me or send me a letter?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, let's go on to Dr. David Slobodnik, tab number 7.
Dr. Slobodnik appeared in person at the board offices. Do we want to take this tab out of order and allow him time to log in to the meeting?
Yeah, that's fine. So he showed up and he went back home, and you're suggesting he might be on the road right now?
Yes, or logging. I think board staff directed him to maybe go into the conference room and log in from his phone.
Okay. So we'll skip tab number 7 and come back to it. We're going on to tab number 8, matter of Dr. James Duba, D.C.
Board members, this is the Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan again. I just wanted to point out that there's an evaluation here, and if you'd like to discuss the evaluation, my recommendation would be to go into executive session with the doctor and his attorney to discuss those specific, you know, health-related issues, if the board feels that's necessary. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move into executive session and invite Dr. Subin, his legal representative, to join us.
Okay, give me 1 minute to set up the breakout room.
There a second?
Second the motion.
And that's for, for
legal advice.
For purposes of discussing confidential information.
Perfect.
Yes.
Those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. The time is 10:11. So, Ms. Vanderbeam, you're going to do Zoom magic and get us in there?
Yep.
Okay.
It looks like we lost them.
Okay. I don't see the next participant.
Ryan's emailing them right now with the link to have them rejoin.
Okay.
Do you, in an effort of efficiency, do you want to take a 10-minute break real quick?
Yeah, or, let's do a 10-minute recess and come back at 10:45.
Okay, perfect. I think we can proceed without him.
Okay. So let's take, do you want to try to call him? Can you get him?
Board staff's been trying to call him, and it's not. It just goes to voicemail.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take tab number 7, matter of Dr. David Slobodnik in case 2021-023. Ms. Vanderbeam.
Before you have a probation and extension request memo for Dr. Slobodnik from Investigator Slobodnik. As you recall, at the January meeting, or the November meeting, Dr. Slobodnik was present and had not complied with his board order. We had given him additional time because he stated he had not received the board order, and part of the requirement was for him to take a fitness to practice evaluation to ensure that he was safe and competent to practice. He has not completed any of the items for his consent agreement. He has not scheduled his fitness to practice evaluation, which was due on 2/5 of 2023. He has not provided any continuing education hours or submitted any request for approval for any of the continuing education hours. He states he has absolutely no money to complete these, and he made this request on February 1st, which was 4 days before he was supposed to comply with the first continuing education and have his fitness to practice evaluation completed. He claimed he attempted to reach board staff several times in the last 2 weeks. He'd left messages on our voicemail, and he'd emailed the general info box. When we searched that inbox, we found only the one request that he submitted. We had no other requests, and we had no other phone calls or voicemails from his phone number.
Okay. So he's obviously not compliant with his board order.
And from staff's perspective, it's concerning that there's been no attempt. Right? He's not reached out and said, when I have the funds and availability, here are the courses I'm planning on taking. It's 4 days before everything's due. I can't comply. The one thing he did comply with is he did renew timely and complete his renewal. But other than that, he's not compliant, and he does have another pending complaint. And the other concerning issue is in his statement that's in your materials, he did say that he is going back to practice to kind of deal with his financial issues to be compliant, and that was the point of the fitness to practice evaluation, was to ensure that he was fit to practice before he went back to practicing.
Okay. So we can open up a complaint for a violation of a board order, or we could try to grant him the 30-day extension that he requested, or do something else, board members. What's your pleasure? What would you like to do, or would you like to discuss?
Do you think 30 days will make a difference?
No.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I don't think that extension is going to do much in this case. This has been a pattern for as long as I remember dealing with these issues.
Is it an option to move forward to a formal interview at this point?
Yeah, I think what you would want to do, document, and again, because the board meetings are so close together because of the special one, you could just open the complaint for non-compliance and then at the next meeting move forward to a formal hearing for revocation if you want, or suspension.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that even in and of itself gives a window where if he wants to show some kind of responsibility, he can get something scheduled and bring that to our attention, but I don't think that'll happen regardless.
Yeah, I just want to see a pathway to an endpoint here. But otherwise, you know, and this becomes, you know, a real actual concern to the safety of the public, which is our job. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we open a complaint against Dr. Slobodnik for failing to comply and violating a board order.
Okay. A second.
All right, I got first by Dr. Ben, and I think a second by Dr. Knopf. Any further discussion? Okay. Yeah, and I think for discussion's sake, I mean, he's had excuse after excuse after excuse, and I don't think a 30-day extension is going to change things for him. He's come in the past with binders of bills that he said were unpaid, and he's always had financial trouble, so I don't see how things will be different. So I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. We will open a complaint for violating a board order. Okay, now on to board business, tab number 12.
The item I have in terms of my report is regarding renewal applications. Board staff has finished processing all renewal applications. I put together a slide deck for you all, just to look at where we're at historically. This year we've processed thus far, so just know there's still some that are still being processed, incompletes that are being addressed, admin suspension applications that we're receiving and processing. So at the time I pulled my report, we have processed 2,273 applications. Which we'll see we've kind of continued to maintain that larger pool. So we've processed thus far 100 more than we did this last year. In terms of received, obviously December is when we receive everything. We received 1,392 in the month of December, 39 in January, and 8 in February. And again, we're still kind of continuing to see some of those trickle in. For the addressing their admin suspension and their incomplete. In terms of our processing, as you can see, we processed the majority of those applications in January and December. We still have 36 that are incomplete. So much like you saw today in the meeting, that when we reviewed their application, we determined something was 36. In that application, and they have 60 days to submit that to us. Otherwise, their license has been placed on admin suspension. they'll have to pay the $200 reinstatement fee and then we'll spot back into compliance. In terms of the dual system, about 250 of the applications that came in were on paper, and approximately 2,040, so 89% of them, were received electronically. So we didn't have to mail any out. We gave doctors the option to either do paper or electronic. In terms of statuses, in active, we have 2,160 that are active. Lapsed, there are 72, so that's people that have gone the 2 years now and have come off admin suspension and now fall into that last category where they'll have to reapply. We put 141 on admin suspension, 20 were retired, 12 were inactive, and then there's a small population of about 19 that are on probation. And again, that admin suspension does not include the 36 that are incomplete. And that completes my report. Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, how did it work with the confusion of people having to pay first and then complete the application? Did that help things instead of them doing the application and thinking they were done and then not paying?
I believe it did. I thought in my notes. I think in my notes we only had like 43, I think, that paid and didn't submit an application, but we were able to reach out. And I think we're down to about 4 that we've not gotten their application, but we did put their license on admin suspension since they've received multiple notices from us regarding the fact that we didn't have their application.
And so what do they say when you say, hey, you paid and you didn't submit an application? Did they say, well, I was in the middle of the process and just got sidetracked, or did they think they were done because they paid?
They thought they were done because they paid.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Okay. So I have a question, and really I just kind of want to go on the record here so with regards to some of the issues. We see that big bolus of applicants processing in December and January, and this also is at a time when we are seeing a lot of continuing education recertification, and this has become an administrative issue that we've had dialogue about over on and off for a long, fairly long period of time, and more recently, more dialogue about. And I know that we have discussed a couple of things. One of them is that we are anticipating a new software platform that will facilitate this. Another thing that we have discussed is spreading these licensure periods out over the year, basically basing licensure date on a month of birth as opposed to just at the end of the year. And there has been some discussion of extending the length of the license to more than 1 year, as has been the case with other allied healthcare professionals. So I know we're addressing this, and the specific question I have is with regard to what are our plans with regard to the new software platform, because of my understanding based upon staff input is that we anticipate that that's going to alleviate the burden a significant amount.
We do believe that it's going to elicit significant amount because staff, it will limit the amount staff will have to touch. You will do your information inputting into the portal, which is the database, as opposed to us pulling it out of Adobe and typing it into Access. So that's how it currently occurs now. So we're having to touch 4 different platforms to process a renewal, whereas in Cynthia, the payment will be there, the information will be there, all of that is tied together, and then we just have to review it. And in some cases, we could automate it even more so, as long as you don't answer yes to any of the compliance questions, it would just automatically bring it to you. And we wouldn't have to touch it at all.
And a follow-up question, that's great. We want that to happen soon. And the follow-up question is, what about the month, or the birth month distribution of licensing. Is that, is Cynthia friendly with that? And will that require any kind of administrative, you know, rule change or process for us to move to that process if we contemplated doing so?
The great thing about Cynthia is it's very customizable. That was part of the reason we went to the platform, is that there's a lot of options within the customization of building it where it's just flipping a switch as opposed to rebuilding the entire platform. So it'll just be one of the options that we'll have to just tell them that this is the renewal cycle. And we've asked not to utilize first month. We've asked for issue month.
Okay.
So the month that your license is issued, it would expire at the end of that month. So if you were issued a license anytime in January, your expiration date would be February 1st. You would have to renew by February 1st. Sorry, let me clarify that. So your license would expire.
So I remember in one of the dialogues that we had about this on this subject that Dr. Guarino had brought up that that one factor against date of issue is that those dates tend to occur in a bolus following Part 4 exams. And so I'm wondering why we want date of issue versus date of birth.
Legally, I just wanted to jump in real quick, if that's okay, Alyssa.
Sure.
Legally, if you go by birth date, the license is only active for a year. So if somebody chooses to apply in November, then it's likely they have to turn around and reapply for the next year at the same time. That's the issue, because the board only has authority to issue a license for 1 year. It cannot issue a license for one day longer than a year. So
in a calendar year?
Yes. So if it's by birthday, then it goes by your birthday. So if you apply 6 months after your birthday, then you only get a license for 6 months, and then you got to reapply.
How would that be different from a date of licensure? If you're licensed on November, then the same rule would apply, would it not?
Are you talking about the way it currently is?
No, I'm talking about if we went to month of licensure as the renewal month, and based upon what you just said, that would mean that if a person were licensed in November, then they would have, that would give them 1 month and then have to reapply. How's it different between month of licensure and month of birth?
You only have one birthday a year. That's the problem. Whereas if you do it by issue date, then you don't care about which year specifically, right? You just need to do it every year. So people are on clearly different tracks, and that's what kind of breaks it up. So you do get that license for a full year.
I think what Dr. Bennett is saying, what about those of us that are already licensed, you know, and you know, how would that work? Like if I got licensed in, let's say, June, and I'm on a calendar year right now, how do we catch people up, and how would we deal with people being licensed for a half year to get back on track, or how would any of that work?
Well, currently you have people who are stuck in that situation. So for those of you, you would just suffer a year probably where you would, you know, have a shortened period of licensure.
Yeah. And then what about, I'm just thinking out loud right now, are there any privacy concerns around, like, my birthday is January 25th, is my license going to say January 25th?
Well, since you just told everybody there's no privacy, you're
And that was the other issue, too, Seamus's point, that puts the board staff in a position where we're managing 365 days, and whereas administratively, how other boards have done this is, regardless of the date your license is issued, it's always issued on the first.
Okay.
So we only issue licenses every 2 weeks in our current procedure, and then the date on those licenses is always the first of the month, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So even though I may be licensing you on January 15th, your license says January 1st.
Okay.
And so then your license expires, but you have a whole year before that license expires.
So we have the option to do the wind licensure frequency and data curve without any kind of rule change. If we were going to go to a more than 1 year license term, would that require a rule change or anything of that nature?
It could be part of this legislation package as we're talking about it, and if that's what we wanted included.
I foresee, you know, another problem, just again, thinking out loud, like people forget to renew their license when it's due on an annual, like, Happy New Year kind of license. Like, how people are going to remember what month that they got licensed in and stay on track of that? I don't know.
Well, you would still have the requirement to provide the 90-day notice.
Yeah.
We would still be noticing you have 90 days to renew your license. They would still be getting that notice. That still would fall on our responsibilities, is to notice them and just kind of have that continual cycle. That, and the great thing about that is all of that now lives in that portal where we can send messages through the portal. You'll get the email saying you have messages in your portal. You need to log in and verify it. We can send those reminders, those types of things. It can continue to occur. And it's less burdensome than staff than the current arrangement that we have.
Can we go to a 2 year cycle on even numbered and odd numbered months?
Well, you could even do it by, you could go to a 2 year cycle and say if your license was issued in an odd year, you renew in an odd year. And if your license was issued in an even year, you renew in the even year.
Yeah.
And every year you have to, and because it's a 2 year, you have to have 2 hours of record keeping. So.
All right, so we talked about this a lot. Like, what do we need to do to change?
We're working on it. There is part of the budget packet for us was the restoration of the funds for the deputy director and to change our licensure process to the issue months.
Okay. And so I might have spaced out in the middle of what Dr. Bennett was asking. So is this a rule change? Is this a GERC thing, or is this something that you can do?
It's the legislative change.
And how legislative, like what's the pathway to that? What would have to happen?
So it was part of the budget packet, and there's a technical bill. Yes, it was part of my budget request.
Okay.
So, and then I was going to have Mr. Dominic update you on probation statuses and suspended license, just so we kind of know where we're at.
So in your folder, there were two reports. One is the professionals on probation status, and the other one is professionals on suspended status. We currently have 20 professionals on probation. 9 of them came before you today. So those were kind of some of the older dated orders. And then we currently have 2 professionals that are on suspended status. And then do you have any questions about either of them?
I totally appreciate the hard work of you guys, like, trying to catch us up on some of these probation orders that have been hanging out there. Any other questions? Okay. What about the monitoring program?
I provided you with a memo. One of the things that our board does not have, that's maybe a tool in the toolbox we would like to have, is a non-disciplinary confidential monitoring program. And we have authority under 32.23 to establish one. The board just needs to establish the criteria for entering into that. And I would just like to point out to you that under that, we could put someone in a confidential monitoring program who reaches out and identifies that maybe they have they're having issues with chemical dependency, psychiatric, psychological, or behavioral health disorders that are impacting their ability to practice. And that program should include education, intervention, therapeutic treatment, kind of whatever that recommendation of approved monitor. And that if they enter into that confidential agreement, just if they don't comply with it, the board still has authority to take them out of that confidential program and put them in a public program that would be, you know, on the website, all of that, and take disciplinary action if needed. So that's just part of it. It would just be another tool to kind of address that and encourage them to come forward before we have a disciplinary issue such as a DUI or something happening in the treatment room. And then also for you to delegate that authority for those agreements to the executive director. Just also to, as part of that, to aid with the confidentiality of the program, that they wouldn't have to come before the board and have the discussion that that's something that you would allow the executive director to negotiate within the terms of what we say the enrollment criteria is for them to enter that program. So with that, if you have any questions for me, I'm happy to help answer them.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. My question, as we discussed briefly last week, is who sets the criteria for when the board staff determine that there is something that needs to be, when the person is in a program, something comes to light. Do we have to establish criteria, say when anything happens like this, they come out of the program and go towards the board, or is it just any suspicion of anything that's in statute the board would be sensitive to and then call it to the attention of the board? Or to me, that's the tipping point on this kind of a thing. It can be a great program, but we also don't want it to be a program where people are using it as a vehicle to avoid what should be a potential disciplinary issue.
Well, so part of it, right, they need to self-report the matter. They probably need to come before and say, I've identified I have this problem and I need to resolve it before it leads to those other things. Reviewing their current status, so maybe somebody who's had 5 DUIs is not going to be eligible to participate in a non-disciplinary confidential monitoring program, or someone like that's had other egregious actions before you would not be eligible. It would have to, in a lot of cases, it's really going to come down to first-time offenders.
And the way the agreement works, it's automatic. So it's a confidential monitoring program. If the board determines that you did not comply with it, which can be a letter from one of the providers. And once you see it, we can provide you, you know, maybe next meeting, a consent that will show you the boilerplate terms. And once they fail to comply, it's automatically a disciplinary public record. It reverts. So it just as a matter of law, not by any operation, not by anything you do. and then if that individual, you know, is having issues, you're going to get reports consistently from whoever they're treating with. It's the confidential monitoring program is not the board monitoring them. It's them being monitored by a health professional who then reports to the board and disseminates that information for you.
If I may ask a question or make a statement anyway, it seems like we would need to develop an algorithm source to plug in these specific needs and what should transpire after that. Type of monitoring or psychological evaluation, AA program or whatever. So an analog, a type of analog would help that, would it not?
Possibly. I think what's important, again, these are usually boilerplate. The boards all use the exact same one.
Oh, okay.
But again, you can augment. But, you know, my recommendation would always be that, you know, while they're confidential and the board wouldn't discuss them on the record, the board could at least review it. And if they did have an issue, say, you know, I'd like to go into executive session or to discuss confidential information. And at that time, you could say, look, you know, I think the terms aren't correct. This is what we think the terms are. So you would always get that chance to review the SRA.
I just think it's an excellent idea. It can really save a lot of headaches in the future.
And to prevent some things happening so we don't, they don't end up right in front of us. And I'm sure that this wheel has been invented. I mean, I'm aware we've been to, Dr. Greeno and I have been at FCLB meetings where these kinds of programs have been discussed, and we've always thought they were great. And I'm sure that these wheels have already been invented elsewhere, so we can look at, you know, we can look at those models, and it sounds like there's a lot of uniformity, so that means it probably works. That's good.
Well, and the crux of my memo and the crux of what I've used to establish the program, I've used several other boards' language to put this together before you and didn't really steer outside any of what is already out there for practitioners.
Well, and I think about what problem this is trying to solve, and I think back to 10 or 11 years ago, we used to take people who had DUIs, and I know that we treat them differently now. You know, back then, you know, they would be on a probationary status and we'd be tracking everything that they do, you know, making sure that they comply with, you know, everything that the state requires of them. So yeah, in the spirit of being proactive, if anybody wants to come forward and say that they've got a problem ahead of time and get treatment, I think that's amazing. And then we wouldn't have to treat it as a disciplinary action. Can I back us up just for 30 seconds to our probation and suspension? What is our mechanism? You know, I know we're transitioning to the Sentia database. You know, in my brain, I see computer software that you can put a doctor on probation for today's date. You can put in the parameters of the probationary period. There could be four components of that all have different timely components potentially. And then there could be like red flag reminders going off for staff when things are missed. And I know that's not the way that we've operated. I know we've had a cart system with paper files and different color coding and things could get buried for 5 years and ignored. You know, like what is our transition toward? Am I speaking about the future, or is this something that could be pretty close in the near future? Or is it gonna happen with the Sentia database where we can put somebody on probation and track it in real time and get an alert when they fall off?
So Cynthia will do that. We'll be able to track it in real time, enter that information, monitor that information. Additionally, as I reported to you a couple months ago, we've digitized all of our licensing files. We've digitized the majority of our complaint files. So as we're working and building Cynthia, some of the stuff's going to start integrating where that licensure report and that file is going to be right there in the Cynthia database where you can see it too, right? So we have all those paper copies. The same is true for the complaint data. That investigative file now lives in their digital file. So all of it's starting to come together. I mean, and so all those pieces are starting to fall in place. Plus, for the first time, the board will have a compliance program that will be able to manage all of this in an integrated system instead of piecemealing it and trying to manage it with Google calendars and spreadsheets and all of that. So we're close.
It's like it's going to really streamline the whole process for a sunset review as well. Like everything is going to be kept up in real time and available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I have to drop off.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. Knopf.
So back to the establishing confidential monitoring program, I just need a motion to establish this and move forward. And we'll get that put together for you.
Okay, I'll make the motion to establish the monitoring program and direct the board to move, board staff to move forward with it.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, I got a first by Ms. Powell, second by Dr. Bennett. Any further discussion? Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, we got 4 out of 5 ayes. Dr. Knopf is absent. Okay, and then lastly, I wanted to put on our agenda the continuing education approval process just as an informational piece and a 10-minute discussion. I don't want this to go 45 minutes, but Alyssa, I think, gave us a lot of information, that I didn't have and kind of wasn't on my radar before about the actual nitty-gritty details of what applicants go through and what kind of forms and notices they get along the way. I spoke to Alyssa last week, and she told me that our approval, I mean, we have over 700, applications that come in and in a calendar year, and sometimes 200 from one school. And it's got me asking the question, this is super important. It's not our primary focus. I don't feel like as a board, like we're consumed with all the licensing issues and protecting the public. And it's just got me, asking the question, like, what would happen if, we're struggling to keep up right now. What would happen if we had that number doubled overnight? What is our due diligence? Is it our responsibility to timely complete every fee requirement that comes in, or is it a bandwidth issue of, we have what we have, and if people want to get something approved, maybe they need to do it 3 or 4 or 6 months ahead of time with the expectation that it's going to take longer and that it can't be a staff emergency of, oh my gosh, I've got to teach this class in the next month because I booked a room and I need this approved, and then they get hate phone calls. So I'm going to start with that. Ms. Vanderveen, if you, want to say anything that you want to say, thanks for putting everything together, and then we'll let board members weigh in on whatever they'd like to say.
I think I would just kind of concur with your statement. It's a heavy list. I think it's important. I think there absolutely needs to be parameters around it to ensure quality exists within that. But it takes us longer to process the CE application than it takes us to process the licensure application in terms of what all we have to put together and track down for those applications and just how hefty they are when you're dealing with the syllabus and the number of hours in the syllabus and do we agree with the assessment of where they've defined the topics within that syllabus and making sure that it's not maybe selling a product over and that there's clinical benefit. So it takes us quite a while to put those together, process them, and then get them back out. I could, in terms of staffing, probably use a person and a half to manage this effectively and not have them do anything else in terms of man hours.
Yeah. Well, you guys have done an outstanding job, especially with all the last minute requests, and I hear what you're saying. So thank you, first of all. I think it would help a lot of people to know a little bit more of, well, the definitions of certain things on the application, like we talked about a vendor, and not to cover that today, but definitions of vendors and sponsors, so that when they're completing these applications, A, they get it right and complete them thoroughly. Like, is there any particular vulnerability or weakness in the application that they should be aware of as part of the packet that you send them or the letter you send them or whatever information you do, if it's on the application even, just starting the application, a statement that says, don't bother to send it in if you haven't done everything and here's your checklist. Is there anything like that exists now?
I think as the application stands now, there is quite a bit of that. There is absolute room for improvement, but in terms of fires that I've tried to put out, this mm-hmm. one wasn't the one that was probably burning the brightest since I've walked in the door. it's something that's on the list to address, and really I had kind of budgeted it for getting us to Cynthia, getting Cynthia up and running, and then tackling this issue, like maybe utilizing or looking at something like EE Broker to manage some of this, where it's not so heavily burdensome on staff, and finding some other ways, better ways to manage this. Initially, when we walked into this, I think our intent was really to have the CEs live in Cynthia like everything else, but it was not on the table. It's probably something we could discuss as an enhancement with them, but at this moment in time, it does not exist in Cynthia, so we're going to have to find another pathway for that.
Okay. Would it be helpful at all if we didn't accept these applications except twice a year or quarterly, or would it freeze your burden at all?
No, it just means that we get a huge stack. I mean, that's like, for complete transparency, we've been telling CE providers that since November 1st, since we started renewals, we haven't been processing CE applications, so we have a backlog of like 200 that we have to start processing now that staff's working on. So, We'll get through them. We always do. It's just, it's a heavy list. I think Ryan processed like 70 for Parker before this meeting, in addition to all of this. So.
Oh, wow.
And when they're paid pre-checked, I'm going to be very transparent, paid pre-checked absolutely speeds up the process for us, because then a lot of that burden doesn't fall to us to verify with the saying this topic is within our realm and we accept these are not in our topics, we don't accept these. Okay. So those case pretexts, because so much more of them fall to the Federation and not to us, there's a little less burden there for staff.
Okay. So there are some PACE courses that are approved that we can't approve, it's not on our list.
Correct. They fall within that topical. A lot of the, here's how to improve your practice, here's how to market your practice, here's
right.
how to market your practice on TikTok.
Right.
So we're
right.
not grouped though.
Okay.
And addressing those rules might provide some breathing room as well.
Yeah, what is the pathway to do that? Is that done through GERC, or like how do we do that?
Yeah. That would be a list of GERC things.
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa Girkman. I appreciate what Angela's suggesting. I think that we have both a quantity and a quality issue. And I think that part of the quantity issue is the quality issue. I think that there is, we've talked about what a heavy lift it is and how many resources we're expending doing that. And yet it can't be the highest priority for us, and so it puts us in this difficult spot. But I also, you know, in light of recent cases, I've taken the time to read that language. And, you know, healthcare is a dynamic subject. I was surprised to see things like HIPAA are not on the disapproved list. In looking at that language, there's some pretty bad language in there. It's pretty confusing. It really needs to be, I don't think we want to do patchwork here. I think we need to do a comprehensive evaluation. And I think that, we would benefit from investigating wheels elsewhere that have already been invented that are working. And I don't think I think that this should be something I'm a strong advocate for a separation of board and staff, and that staff do staff work and board do board work. In this case, I feel like it needs to be a team effort. I think that we have resources through the FCLB and other areas where we can, you know, we can start on a collegial level as doctors talking to other organizations, and we can let our administrative staff use those resources on the admin side through the FCLB. But I think that we should identify this not as an urgent priority, because we've been dealing with urgent priorities, but I think we're now to a point where we can start looking at it as a priority and begin to really do more of, you know, I would like to, 6 months from now, be able to have a product that we're proud of. And I think we start with just a methodical approach to that. So those are my thoughts.
Very well put.
I have a maybe horrible idea.
Again?
I'm going to zone out while you speak for a minute.
Just remember, he's leaving in June. Like,
I know.
Yeah, here we go.
I threw the pot.
Yeah, don't take his terrible ideas and then let him off the hook.
If you want to go hunting and you get a tag, and you have to get into a lottery system to be able to go hunting and get your license. Can we offer a lottery for 300 CE courses that we're going to take for the year? Limit our workload?
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Rich. That's a bad idea.
Spencer, you talk to him. But, you know, how fair is it that a Parker can submit 200 CE applications? What if every college, like, threw 200 CE applications? I'm sure this wasn't a problem when we didn't take online, when there was no internet, when people would have to show up. And I love online education. I'm an advocate for that. But if people had to show up in our state and teach a class, how many applications would we have? You know, we have this problem because we take online CEs, and where does it end? You know, what if it turns into 1,400 or 2,000 applications?
You're right.
Potential changes, maybe an accredited university wouldn't need to get online with approved. Because part of it right now is, even if they're an accredited college or university, if they're teaching the course online and not in person on campus, they have to get it approved by us. So potentially, if there's a change there, I mean, Parker wouldn't need to get any courses approved by us. It would just have to fall when the doctor puts on the renewal. It would just have to fall within the courses that we approve for continuing education.
Right. So.
Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Paul.
They just have to renew every couple of years. The question I have is about the date. If you submit the application to teach continuing education course for whatever hours, and you don't have the date set yet, is that a problem? And or if you add dates to it or you change the date, does that mean a whole new application?
Technically, by statute, it does mean an entire new application. And we've run into some issues. I think when you start talking about the renewal,
uh-huh.
We've been teaching a course for 10 years, and it has, and you just keep renewing it, and you say that the content hasn't changed.
It has, yeah.
It has to have changed. Like, documentation in 10 years would have to have changed, right?
Right.
And they're just renewing it, and you have doctors that have taken that same course and have taken it for 10 years. And so there's a lot on the back end I think we're starting to learn and sort out in terms of the auditing. Like, how do we know when the number's been the same for 10 years that you're not just reusing that course every time you renew?
Right. So, right, as of right now, it requires a new application.
If they submit a renewal and they say that the content has not changed, it's mm-hmm. just a renewal application.
Okay.
The providers and the date are starting to get around it by saying it's various dates because it's online. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
24/7 on demand.
24/7 on demand because it's online. So in some ways, right, like the world's changed and the rule hasn't been updated to kind of reflect the environment we are now all.
Gotcha. Okay. So as of right now, if an application is submitted, if the date changes or if they add dates, more dates to teach the course, they need to fill out as well.
Technically, yes.
Technically. Okay.
This is why we need clarification.
Yeah. Okay. All right, that's one issue unresolved. We'll get resolved. I had a question. Have we been able to define a sponsor versus a vendor? Yeah, because that's on the application. I'm not sure that when they put a vendor down, I understand the vendor, but a sponsor, if it's someone like Foot Lovers is sponsoring my seminar, for example, you know it's because I'm promoting them, right? Well, we don't know, but that's what I would be suspicious of if I'm looking at that application. Is that in any way a question or are you thinking about that?
So if you have a sponsor, they're supposed to provide the agreement, which my expectation, or at least staff's expectation, is when we see those, it outlines, I have a 50-minute course. I've given them 5 minutes of my 50-minute course, so I still meet the course requirements of instruction, and but then also that within that, there's no requirement for them to attend my seminar or get their CE credit to purchase or participate in that.
Okay. All right.
I think that's really what we're looking for, is making sure that we're not giving CE credit for infomercial.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks again for all the information on the CE approval process and application. And we can use that in future board meetings.
One that you're not at?
Yeah.
Also, just real quick, does it have to be an application online or could it be a hard copy application? I forgot that.
We'll take them anyway they come to us right at the moment. But we're trying to, that's one of those things we're trying to address. Like I said, renewals was a pretty heavy lift because we shifted and I thought we were going to be on Cynthia. So we're starting training in Cynthia, which is exciting. So we're kind of starting to phase through that. So, and then cleaning up for all of that. So we're starting to stabilize. I think we're starting to fill that. And I think this will be the next project we probably undertake.
Cool. Okay. Thank you so much for that.
So we've talked about it. Like, what is a foreseeable pathway to addressing the rules that need to be changed, you know, in this regard, regarding the CE process, but also, you know, we've got a lot of rules that we might want to change. I don't know. It's easy to identify problems and then nothing changes, right? And it's been that way for years. And it's going to depend on the staff workload. Like we're not going to talk about it in October and November, December, right? You know, like you guys are completely inundated with other things at that point. So I'm just thinking out loud, like how do we identify and carve out time to visit our rulemaking and have it together so that it's ready to present to GERC?
Maybe a special meeting?
Sounds like a board retreat, but I don't know.
I think that we need to have a board retreat and then create a task force, and the task force should be headed by somebody who wants to do some volunteer work, who's a content expert specifically on these things. And that might be somebody who had past leadership experience on the board, and I think we ought to create that task force that launches on July the 1st.
I'll call Dr. Baker.
But remember, any time that you do discuss this, we have to have a meeting. So the other thing you could do is you could form a committee, and you could request people from the public to join that committee as well, and you could get a bunch of, you know, you could get other people's input on what would help.
Well, and that was my thought too. Like, isn't this, you know, and part of this is the work of the Arizona Association of Chiropractic, and, you know, maybe if we included somebody from that group, we could collaborate and get together. But I don't know how it works. I mean, we're not supposed to lobby on our own behalf. You know, if we did get the AAC involved and they have a lobbyist and they're carrying the torch for this, is that something that happens, or is this just something that we do for GERC?
No, because you also have to, you know, hold notice. You have to hold a meeting for your notice of proposed rulemaking. And so this kind of jumps out in front of that. You may want to be careful to put too many industry members or outside industry members who, you know, are interested. But, you know, it's good to have the association there. And you're not lobbying, really. You're just everybody's having a discussion, and the committee can only make recommendations to the full board. So.
Yeah, I think a stakeholders group, low profile. We don't need to be pinging on any legislative radars unless we identify an issue. My preference would be to just identify the language problems, get stakeholders, you know, get stakeholders input, identify the problems and say, okay, these are the ones that we know we can address. Our stakeholders are all going to, there's probably going to be teams that they want to have changed that we're not going to be able to change. But we at least engage them in the process and then you just follow the GERC process. I'm not inclined to want to ping on the political radar screen.
Something else you might want to consider as part of this rule package is, in addition to the record keeping, maybe including jurisprudence. There's not a lot of jurisprudence courses out there. Having it be a requirement, I think would be helpful based on what we see. I think a lot of practitioners take the jurisprudence exam when they first apply, and they never open that book again, and then they're before us, and they're surprised.
I agree.
I've worked with other boards that even the board hosted the training. It existed on their website. It was part of the renewal fee, and they take that jurisprudence exam every time they renew their license, and that way you capture any changes that have occurred in legislation and in rules to make sure everybody's current with the state of your rules. So this is something to consider because that is in our rules.
Yeah. And I believe that the national board and the federation, like they're willing to put that test together for us and administer it.
Yeah, I think the national board wants to do that. And we can have that dialogue.
I think that would be a huge win for us.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, your hands are up.
This is my call to the public. For those of you that are in our virtual audience, you can say whatever you want. That would include Dr. Bill Gallagher or any other person I don't see in our meeting right now, but we cannot reply to you. We would hope that you would keep it short. There's not a two-way dialogue, but this is your chance. Okay. Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned at 11:55 a.m. Thanks, everybody.
Yep.